So we celebrate this great solemnity today, the most holy body and blood of Christ. We also have the beginning of a national Eucharistic revival. Over the next 3 years, the U.S. bishops have asked our church in the United States to really focus on and keep at the forefront our love for Jesus Christ, truly present for us in the Eucharist. As we have been reminded so often since the Second Vatican Council, the Eucharist is the source and summit of our life as Catholics. So the Eucharist is that from which our life flows, and it is our highest good towards which we hope to attain. Right? Why? Because it is Jesus Himself. God is present with us in this most holy sacrament of the altar. And so the Eucharist then is also to be the source of the renewal of the Church. The more devoted we are to Jesus here in the Eucharist, the more we love Him, the more His life will be able to flow through the Church. So we begin this great national Eucharistic revival on this day. Now this feast, often known as Corpus Christi, has as one of its aspects in many places a public procession with the Eucharist. Now, it seems that after the Second Vatican Council, even though it was not asked for specifically by the Council, these processions kind of faded away. It was seen as a kind of triumphalism or ostentation. Cardinal Ratzinger wrote about a similar time in the Church when there was a hesitancy to have this kind of public worship, this public proclamation of our faith in Jesus present in the Eucharist. And that was during the time of the Reformation. Following that, the Council of Trent clarified for us why it is that we have this feast of Corpus Christi, why it is that we want to publicly proclaim our love for Jesus in the Eucharist. And he said that the purpose of Corpus Christi, according to the Council of Trent, was to arouse gratitude in the hearts of men and to remind them of their common Lord. So he says, in a nutshell, we have in fact three purposes. Corpus Christi is to counter man's forgetfulness, to elicit his thankfulness, and it has something to do with fellowship, with that unifying power which is at work where people are looking to the one Lord. As time has gone on, the Church has reclaimed this custom of Eucharistic processions. It is indeed an act of triumphalism, but not of the Church, but the triumph of Jesus, right? Because Jesus is our Lord, we want to proclaim Him to the world. We want to bring Him out to the streets and exalt Him and lift Him on high. So I want to talk about these three purposes then of this great feast, just to elaborate a little bit on them. The first was to counter our forgetfulness. Right? You might begin every day with a great act of love of God, thankful for the gift of your day. You make that, you know, daily devotion, entrusting everything that you're about to do this day to the Lord. And then, what happens a few minutes later? You forget that He's present with you, right? This is, it's kind of our tendency to always forget about God. When we forget about God, and when we allow this to become habitual, right, a process kind of begins. We forget about His sovereignty, who it is that is Lord over our life. And then we forget about His law, right, the way that He has given to us that leads to our human thriving. When we forget about His law, then we forget about His just judgments and what comes to us when we disobey His law. Right? And we might, without even noticing it, just because of our forgetfulness, find ourselves far away from the Lord. Now, it's interesting that in our second reading from St. Paul's first letter to the Corinthians, he's talking about this tradition that was handed on to him, the tradition of the Eucharist, right? That he truly understands that Jesus is present with us, his body and blood, this new covenant that has been given to us. That he's saying this, in fact, in context of a critique of the gathering of the Christians. He says, I do not praise the fact that your meetings are doing more harm than good. And then later on he says, whoever eats the bread of life and drinks the cup of the Lord unworthily will have to answer for the body and blood of the Lord. A person should examine himself and so eat the bread and drink the cup. For anyone who eats and drinks without discerning the body eats and drinks judgment on himself. What is he saying? He's saying this mystery is so great, and at times we're becoming forgetful of the reality that we are coming into contact with, that we are receiving, that we are welcoming into our body, that it is the Lord himself, it is God that we receive in Holy Communion. And if we do so mindlessly, if we do so without examining ourselves, if we do so without being properly prepared, it's not a good thing for us to receive communion. It actually is harmful for us. We're saying when we receive the Lord that we're ready to meet him, the just judge. But if we aren't, we're meeting him anyway. And so St. Paul says, this is why many among you are ill and infirm, and a considerable number are dying. And we can certainly read that in the spiritual sense, right? When we come to the Lord, to Holy Communion, forgetful, not properly disposed or prepared, aware of serious sin in our lives that we haven't confessed, we're actually becoming ill and infirm spiritually because we're not ready, we're not prepared for the grandeur of what Jesus is offering to us. So we have this great feast of Corpus Christi to exalt Jesus in the Eucharist so that we might have awe once again at his presence, and so then properly discern, properly examine ourselves, and properly prepare, especially through the sacrament of confession, when we're aware of serious sin in our life. Then, far from being a detriment to us, receiving the Eucharist will be a great boon, a strength, a source of true life. So this feast counters our forgetfulness. Secondly, it elicits our thankfulness. Right? None of us, in fact, deserve to receive this great gift. And we say that right before we receive communion. Lord, I am not worthy. But with faith, we say, only say the word, and my soul shall be healed. Right? Even though we are not worthy, Jesus has extended this offer to us. He has given us this gift of his body and blood. He wants his life to be in us. He wants to become our food, our sustenance. What greater gift could we receive than the gift of God himself? This gift is so extravagant. And we can parallel it to the miracle that we heard about from Luke's Gospel, the multiplication of the loaves and the feeding of the 5,000. Right, that formula that he takes the bread, he blesses it, he breaks it, and he gives it to them. That's the same formula used at the Last Supper. It's the same formula we use at every Mass. So this is a Eucharistic story here. This is about this gift that we celebrate today. How extravagant is this gift? Well, though it seems so small, it feeds the multitude, and there is left over, right? It overflows. So it is in the Eucharist. What is presented is insignificant, really. It's very small for all of our needs, isn't it? And yet, God provides for all of our spiritual hunger. He provides for all of our spiritual needs through this gift. Not the physical satisfaction, but the spiritual sustenance that we need is given to us. So the more we recognize how beautiful this gift is, the more we celebrate it, and the more time we spend in the presence of our Blessed Lord in the Eucharist, the more our heart grows in gratitude and thankfulness. So this feast counters our forgetfulness. It elicits our thankfulness. And finally, it has to do with fellowship, with that unifying power at work where people are looking to the one Lord. Okay, so what Cardinal Ratzinger, later Pope Benedict, was talking about is when we have the Eucharistic procession, of course, Jesus is first at the line and we're all following behind Him. All of our eyes are looking to Him. We're allowing Him to lead us. And it's precisely in that that the Church is unified. It's precisely in that that we find authentic fellowship. Right? So we can think about a pilgrimage, for example. I was just hiking a lot in the Rockies the last 2 weeks. And if you expend all of your energy focused on the people you're hiking with and talking to them, your route goes a lot slower and you get to the destination a lot more exhausted. Okay? But if you keep your eyes fixed on the goal and you make it there, you're also able to celebrate more with them, right? There's actually a deeper sense of fellowship that comes with having a goal that is higher, that is bigger than just us. And so if you imagine a pilgrimage where everyone starts from their own home to the one place, right? Rather than focusing on meeting up with each other, if we focus on getting to the destination, we will find unity faster and better and in a deeper way. This, I think, is what Cardinal Ratzinger is talking about. When we have our focus on the Lord first as the source and summit, when we all put Him first, when we fix our attention on Him, truly present with us in the Church, in the Eucharist, then He draws us into union. Then He gives us authentic fellowship. Right? We all want to be part of a strong community. We want fellowship. We want to be known and loved in part in a community, right? Where will that come from? It will come from first fixing our attention and our love on the Lord, who will teach us how to love and how to have true fellowship. St. Thomas Aquinas, in one of his hymns for Corpus Christi, said, "Quantum potes, tantum aude." Dare to do as much as you can in showing your praise to Jesus, who is here with us in the Eucharist. As much as you can, as much love as you can draw out of your hearts, as much gratitude as you can offer to Him, dare to do it. Today is the day to proclaim our love for Jesus in the Eucharist. And if we do so, He will fill us with life. He will renew the Church. He will strengthen our fellowship with one another.